ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवते उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। This morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, entitled The Behavior of a Perfect Person. Text number 38, 39, and 40. Kvachid
alpam.
Kvachid bhuri bunje anam svadu asvadu va kvachid bhuri gunopetam gunahinam uta kvachit shadayo pahritam Kvapi kadachin manavarjitam bunje buktvata kasmins chid diva naktam yadrichaya. And you only have half the verse? Oh. Okay. Yeah, they do that, don't they? Okay. Kvachid alpam kvachid bhuri.
Kvachid alpam kvachid bhuri.
Bunje nam svadva saduva.
Bunje nam svadva saduva.
Kvachid bhuri gunopetam.
Kvachid bhuri gunopetam.
Gunahinam uta kvachit. Kvachid alpam kvachid bhuri.
Kvachid alpam kvachid bhuri.
Bunje nam svadva saduva.
Bunje nam svadva saduva.
Kvachid bhuri gunopetam.
Kvachid bhuri gunopetam.
Gunahinam uta kvachid.
Gunahinam uta kvachid.
Kvachid alpam kvachid bhuri. Bunje nam svadva svaduva. Kvachid bhuri gunopetam. Gunahinam uta kvachid. Shradayo prahritam kvapi kadachin manavarjitam bunje buktvata kasminchid divanaktam yadrichaya. Kvachit, sometimes, alpam, very little, kvachit, sometimes, bhuri, a great quantity, bhunje, I eat, anam, food, swadu, palatable, aswadu, stale, va, either. Kvachit, sometimes. Bhuri, great. Guna upetam, a nice flavor. Gunahinam, without flavor. Uta, weather. Kvachit, sometimes. Shaddhaya, respectfully. Upahritam, brought by someone. Kvapi, sometimes. Kadachit, sometimes. Manavarjitam, offered without respect. Bunje, I eat. Bhuktva, after eating. Atha, as such. Kasminchit, sometimes, in some place. Diva, during the daytime. Naktam, or at night. Yadrichaya, as it is available. Translation. Sometimes I eat a very small quantity, and sometimes a great quantity. Sometimes the food is very palatable, and sometimes it is stale. Sometimes prasada is offered with great respect, and sometimes food is given neglectfully. Sometimes I eat during the day, and sometimes at night. Thus, I eat what is easily available. I'll read the next two verses and then the purport of the second. Kshamam dukulam ajinam chiram valkalam evava vasenyadapi sampraptam dishtabuktushtadiraham. To cover my body, I use whatever is available, whether it be linen, silk, cotton, bark, or deerskin, according to my destiny, and I am fully satisfied and unagitated. Kvachuchaye daropaste trna parnashma basmasu kvachit prasada paryanke kashipava parichaya. Sometimes I lie on the surface of the earth, sometimes on leaves, grass or stone, sometimes on a pile of ashes, or sometimes, by the will of others, in a palace on a first-class bed with pillows. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The learned Brahmana's description indicates different types of births, for one lies down according to one's body. Sometimes one takes birth as an animal, and sometimes as a king. When he takes birth as an animal, he must lie down on the ground. And when he takes birth as a king or a very rich man, he is allowed to lie in first-class rooms in huge palaces decorated with beds and other furniture. Such facilities are not available, however, at the sweet will of the living entity. Rather, they are available by the supreme will, parichaya, or by the arrangement of maya, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 1861, Ishwara sarva bhutanam hridayeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of material energy. End quote. The living entity, according to his material desires, receives different types of bodies, which are nothing but machines offered by material nature, according to the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the will of the Supreme, one must take different bodies with different means for lying down. So I'll just read the English. Sometimes I eat a very small quantity and sometimes a great quantity. Sometimes the food is very palatable and sometimes it is stale. Sometimes prasad is offered with great respect, and sometimes food is given neglectfully. Sometimes I eat during the day, and sometimes at night. Thus I eat what is easily available. To cover my body, I use whatever is available, whether it be linen, silk, cotton, bark, or deerskin, according to my destiny, and I am fully satisfied and unagitated. Sometimes I lie on the surface of the earth, sometimes on leaves, grass, or stone, sometimes on a pile of ashes, or sometimes, by the will of others, in a palace, on a first-class bed, with pillows. This is the description of a brahmana who travels from one place to another, meeting his destiny. So this is also the business of a sannyasi, someone in the fourth stage of spiritual life. In fact, there are four stages of sannyas: kutichak and bahudak are the stages of sannyas where one stays either in his own village or close by the village and practices renunciation or austerity, but nevertheless assisted by others. In the third stage of sannyas, called Paribrajakacharya, Paribrajakacharya means one who travels everywhere, and he is a civil dead man. In other words, he has no connection with society as such, but wherever he goes, he simply depends upon whatever arrangement is made by the will of Providence, by the will of the Lord. So, in this stage, he learns how to depend fully upon God. He also learns how there is an arrangement and a plan of the Lord for every living being. So, it is an opportunity for everyone to learn directly about God's connection with both the material world and with his devotees. His connection with the material world is that he is the supreme controller. As it is said by the philosophers, not a blade of grass can move without the sanction of God. This is a very, very important concept to meditate upon. When we think that we are the doer of activities, when we think that we are the controller, are never fully happy or satisfied, because the material world is like that. You can never be always profitable, and you never lose all the time. The weather is never perfect every day, nor is it bad every day. There's always changing circumstances. So automatically we can understand that it is impossible to be peaceful and happy in the material world. So therefore, Lord Krishna advises us in the Bhagavad Gita, matra sparshas tukonteya sitoshna sukadukada agama paino nityas tangstitikshas pabharata. Happiness and distress in this world are like the appearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception. In other words, winter and summer seasons are coming automatically, and in the summertime, we like to have a cold shower. In the hot days, we like to have a cold shower. Now, the same water, cold water in the wintertime, we don't like to have a cold shower. Or another example, ladies, they have to cook, especially in India, in a very hot kitchen. So many stoves are burning, and they're cooking for their family, and they have to do it. Now, in the wintertime, it is quite all right, because it's cold outside, and it's nice to be in the kitchen, hot, warm. But in the summertime, in the blazing heat, it is very distressful to be in the hot kitchen. But that doesn't mean that we stop cooking. We have to tolerate it. So the nature of the material world is that one has to remain neutral, detached, equanimical in mind, equal to happiness, distress, profit or loss, victory or defeat. This is in the Bhagavad Gita over and over again. This same concept is given. In fact, there's one verse I wanted to read the purport, which is very nice. Yadrichaya lava santushta vanvatito vimatsara. Let's see. Where is that verse? Second chapter, I think somewhere. Yadrichaya lava santushto. Anybody know that verse? Huh? Oh, I don't think it's there, though. No. And there's no index in this book either. Yadrichaya lava santushto dvandatito vimutsara. Nice purport, too. Anyone can help out here? Huh? You have index in your... What verse is that? I forget. 4:10 or something, or 4... No, maybe I'm wrong. 4:22, okay. Gives a very nice explanation of... Actually, it gives a wonderful explanation of proactivity. Yadricha labha santushto dvandvatito vimatsara sama siddhava siddhaucha kridvapi na nibadyate. He who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions. So, santushtaha. Devotees have to learn to be satisfied with a simple life. We have taken vows of austerity. Not that austere, but, feasting, dancing, chanting, no work, it's pretty austere. But you have to be actually satisfied. You are devotees of Krishna, and we shouldn't try to hide that. Everywhere I go nowadays, people say, in America, they say, "Where have you been? We don't see you people anymore." If a devotee has to go to the marketplace to buy some milk for the deities, he takes off his dhoti and kurta, puts on his jeans, a hat, pulls his collar up and tries to hide himself as if he's ashamed. In other countries, people come when they see me, because I go everywhere in my dhoti and kurta. I'm not ashamed to be a devotee. And people say, "Oh, who are you? What are you doing? What is your religion? They don't know. In years gone by, everybody knew Hare Krishna. It was a household word. Because devotees went everywhere in Dodi and Kurta. And even if there were only 5 or 10 devotees in the whole city, because we stand out like sore thumb, as they say, we stand out very clearly, people would think, wow, I see you guys everywhere. You know, because 5 or 10 devotees in their devotional dress. And what does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? A Vaishnava is one who, when seen by others, reminds them of Krishna. So even if we're not a great preacher, but if we just wear our Vaishnava dress, wherever we go, people will think, oh, there's Hare Krishna, and they'll think of Krishna, and they'll get some spiritual benefit. So we have to be satisfied with a simple life, and we should be satisfied with being devotees of Krishna. We have nothing to hide, nothing to be ashamed of. Rather, we should be joyful for the opportunity to demonstrate our faith. A Krishna-conscious person does not make much endeavor even to maintain his body. So like eating, we eat to live. We don't live to eat, but we eat only to maintain body and soul together. He is satisfied with gains which are obtained of their own accord. He neither begs nor borrows, but he labors honestly as far as is in his power, and is satisfied with whatever is obtained by his own honest labor. So a Vaishnava, a Grihastha, he is an honest man. The principles of religiosity are cleanliness, austerity, mercy, and truthfulness. So a Vaishnava is always truthful in every respect. And he works and depends upon the mercy of the Lord for the result. If a good sum of money comes, then he takes whatever he needs for his simple maintenance and uses the rest for a spiritual cause. Whatever he likes, he can spend it on food for life, he can spend it on book distribution, he can spend it on deity maintenance. He can spend it in any way that his little heart desires, but for Krishna. If a lot of money comes, or if a very little comes, then he takes it as the mercy of the Lord. Even then, we know the example of Kolavecha Sridhar. He made his fortune by selling leaf plates. In other words, he was very poor. You don't make a fortune by selling leaf plates. But still, even though he was very, very poor, in fact, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited his house, which was, you know, the greatest blessing he could get, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that he had a water pot. And the unique feature about this water pot was that it was made from very cheap metal, and it had many holes in it. So it didn't hold very much water. But he couldn't afford to buy a new one. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in such ecstasy that he immediately grabbed that pot and began to drink water from it. And Sridhar was very embarrassed. And that same Sridhar, he used to take 50% of whatever he earned from selling, you know, paper leaf plates and leaf cups, you know, a few pennies only. But he would spend 50% for the worship of the Lord. So this attracted Krishna. Krishna was so attracted by the devotion of this man that he personally came into his house and blessed him, Lord Chaitanya. So a devotee is satisfied to work simply and depend upon the Lord. And the devotee sees practically that he always gets enough to keep, Krishna never deserts him. Krishna never puts him in any difficulty, but always takes care of him. And the only way you can see that and confirm your faith is if you practice it. You can't understand Krishna's relationship with his devotee simply by studying it theoretically. You have to practice it. So anyway, Prabhupada says here, he neither begs nor borrows, but labors honestly as far as is in his power and is satisfied with whatever is obtained by his own honest labor. Now this is very nice here. He is therefore independent in his livelihood. Devotee is independent. He's not dependent. You remember the maturity continuum, you know, and going from dependence to independence. That's the private victory. This getting control of your life and control of your mind and senses and having a goal in your life and a mission, what you want to do, and that being your constitution. And by following that process of actively working for the goals that you set in a systematic way, you become free from dependence and you become independent of others. Prabhupada says here, he is therefore independent in his livelihood. He does not allow anyone's service to hamper his own service in Krishna consciousness. So, is it that we're all meant to live in the ashram totally separated from each other? No connectivity? No synergy? No, we're meant to very much work together. Prabhupada's last request to us was, please cooperate and work together, push on this movement. But the only way that we can become effective in our cooperation is to, first of all, be independently situated and satisfied in devotional service. And regardless if anyone else is going to take up the service, if there are 10 devotees or 50 devotees or 5,000 devotees in the community, it doesn't matter. We are satisfied and enthusiastic and patient in our service to Krishna. We have looked in our own hearts. We have made our decisions to serve Krishna. We're satisfied with that. And that is our goal in life. That is who we are. And we focus on that. And we serve Krishna peacefully, joyfully. And the more people that come to assist us, that's wonderful. That's good news. We're so happy. But if people don't come because everybody has their own choice to make, that is also Krishna's mercy. However, for the service of the Lord, he can participate in any kind of action without being disturbed by the duality of the material world. The duality of the material world is felt in terms of heat and cold, or misery and happiness. A Krishna conscious person is above duality because he does not hesitate to act in any way for the satisfaction of Krishna. The other day, a lady asked me a question. What was my favorite expression of Srila Prabhupada? And without any hesitation, I told her that I very much appreciated Prabhupada's instruction to us. And without any hesitation, I told her that I very much appreciated Prabhupada's instruction to us to do the needful. In other words, a devotee does not need to be constantly told what to do. A devotee is a self-starter. A devotee is self-motivated to serve Krishna. He knows that his goal is to serve Krishna, and he uses his intelligence to do whatever is required. If it's required to clean the temple in order that we can receive guests on Sunday, he doesn't protest that, no, I only work with computers. He knows people are going to come to the temple, and we're all the hosts here. We are simply servants. When you go to, I love going to big hotels. I don't go very often, but for a conference or to meet some member or something, because there's always a staircase and a lift for the servants. There's always the servants' entrance. You know? And I feel really happy about that. Because I feel that we ought to have a servant's entrance. Because we are all servants of Krishna's temple. We're fortunate to have this opportunity to be the servant of the greatest. Everyone is a servant, but we have an opportunity to be the direct servants of the deity. But we should never think that we are the masters. If we just want to, whatever it be, sell books, open restaurants, or whatever, then we shouldn't have a temple. We should just do that and work. But if we have this temple, and if we invite guests and congregation to come here, then we are Radharani's representatives. Radharani is in charge of this temple. Radharani is making all arrangements. And we are her servants. And if we don't perform our service politely, with love and devotion, expertly, then it is a stain on Radharani or on Srila Prabhupada. These are Prabhupada's temples. And people will not think badly of us because we are nobody, insignificant. But they will think badly of Srila Prabhupada. And we would be directly precipitating, directly creating that bad image. And that is sinful. So we must always treat our guests with the utmost devotion and love and kindness and hospitality. Our congregation, they are not so fortunate. They have to live away from the deity. They have to live in an atmosphere which is described by Prahlad Maharaj as a deep dark well. Hidvatma patham griham andakupam. Household life can be very dangerous. One is surrounded by family members, and there are so many physical needs and problems, raising a family, raising children. One gets very much bodily conscious if one is not careful. Just like a deep dark well. If you fall in a deep dark well in the middle of the forest, there's a good chance you'll drown, because nobody's going to come and save you in the middle of the forest in a deep well. So household life, people are struggling to maintain their spiritual lives in household life, and they come here to the temple to get a little encouragement, a breath of fresh air, to associate with saintly people. And it is our duty to be completely in the mood of serving and providing hospitality. And that will satisfy Srila Prabhupada very much, if we can just do that, create an oasis in the middle of the desert, a place where people can get a little water to parch the thirst in the dry, impersonal, mechanistic, miserable material world. It's an ocean. Terrible ocean. The material world is compared to an ocean of misery. And this material body is compared to a solid boat. And the scriptures and the teachers of the scriptures are compared to favorable breezes. And, of course, the captain of the boat is the spiritual master. So, we should make sure that we are favorable breezes over here, not unfavorable breezes. The Krishna conscious person is above duality because he does not hesitate to act in any way for the satisfaction of Krishna. Therefore, he is steady both in success and failure. These signs are visible when one is fully in transcendental knowledge. So that is the key, to become steady in your devotional service. You don't have to be a superstar. You don't have to, there's only the very few people who, we were singing this morning. Navina Nirada Rupa Manohara. I immediately thought of Navina Nirada, superstar. You know, he's the greatest book distributor. And he's such an inspiration to all of us. Such a wonderful devotee. We all would like to become like him. I doubt whether any of us can equal him. And we shouldn't be worried about that. We should try to do our very best. And we should compete against ourselves. Compete against yourself to be better and better for the pleasure of Lord Krishna, for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. And in that way, be steady. The most pleasing thing is steadiness. I have seen many, many books. I've seen many flaming stars. What do they call flaming stars? Shooting stars. I've seen many shooting stars also. Just a flash of, brilliance. And strutting like a peacock, so proud. But because of that pride, and because of a lack of understanding and steadiness, that star, it flashes and then disappears. So longevity, concentrate on becoming a steady devotee, patient, perseverant, and at the same time enthusiastic. So there are other verses in the Bhagavad Gita actually with this same message here about accepting only that which comes of its own accord and being satisfied with that. But I'll stop there. It's as I said, I have a busy day, and I just want to thank all of you for giving me this opportunity to visit your community. I've been here now in Croatia and Slovenia, or shall we say former Yugoslavia, for the past couple of weeks. And I've really enjoyed myself. And it's all due to your mercy upon me, giving me a chance to share with you what my Guru Maharaj passed on to us. And as I said, a sannyasi needs to be protected. It is a fun life, a good life, but it is also a hard life. What this Avadhuta Brahman is saying is quite correct. Somewhere we go and we are respected, and somewhere we're dishonored, disrespected, and even, nobody wants any sannyasis around here, this place, you know. We actually go to some places where devotees are bitter or whatever and have some complaints, and you feel very unwanted. And we go to places where we get very nice prasadam, and we go to places where, you know, the food is, devotees don't know how to cook or whatever it is. Well, in Africa, like I said, they only know how to make this cassava. You heard of cassava? It's just, cassava is tapioca. It's the plant, tapioca. And that's all they eat there, practically. I may have something to do with they're all looking like Charles Atlas, you know. They're all very well built in Africa. But they cut this plant, cassava plant, and then they take the bark off it, and then they pound it with a big heavy stone, and knead it and pound it some more, and then they fry it and they do this and that. But it's all and they have vegetables which they put in a soup with lots of oil, and that's their meals, morning, noon, and night. And so when I go there, they try to, they rush around and try to get some rice and dal and this and that, but they don't usually cook it. So, it's, generally I say, just give me some cassava, that they know how to cook. But anyway, they're wonderful devotees. I can tell you some stories about Africa that are just, one of my favorite is, you probably heard it before, but it's such a good story. It's so inspiring. When I first went to, I've been to a number of places in Africa, but one of them is Nigeria. And so the first time I went there, we have a devotee there who's the commissioner of police, Marine Division, for the city of Lagos. So when I arrived there, I wasn't expecting the type of reception that I got. There were a lot of visitors there, especially from the UK and other places. At that time, Lagos was quite wealthy with oil, so there were many businessmen there trying to negotiate business and whatever. And there was a big lineup and a lot of confusion at the immigration, as there is in many third world countries. And so all these British businessmen were lined up to get into immigration, and it was going slowly, and there was no air conditioning in the building, and it was a little frustrating. So here's me, Hare Krishna, cult member, in my devotee cloth, etc., at the back of the line, and in comes a whole delegation of policemen. And I didn't know what was happening. I thought, uh-oh. And they came right up to me, and someone gave me a garland, and then they escorted me right through customs, through immigration, and everything. And all the British people were like, what's going on here? And so Arjuna had arranged all of that. His name is Arjuna Das. So I visited the temple, and I went around Nigeria, and at that time they had 11 temples, all run by Nigerians, no Westerners there at all. no Americans or anything. And very simple, austere. The people are very poor in Nigeria. The government officials are very wealthy. The people are very poor. I don't know if that rings any bells anywhere, but it's become a Kali Yuga phenomenon. Arjuna was very wealthy. What can I say? He had a 3-4 cars. So I got into his Mercedes and we drove off. I went to the temples. I went to a number of the temples around the country. So when I got back to Lagos, I stayed with Arjuna and his wife, who his wife is a disciple of Gopal Krishna Maharaj in Bombay. So I stayed with them. And one day he was from a village. He was a king of a whole small little area in Nigeria. And he had land and he wanted to show me his farm. So he took me out in his car, nice new Mercedes, and he was in civilian dress. He's a very cool-headed. He practices yoga. Even before he met devotees, he was practicing yoga. Actually, Africans are quite spiritual people. Some more and some less, obviously, but they have a tradition. Maybe primitive in some ways. They're not sophisticated people, but they definitely have a deep interest in both witchcraft and spiritual life. I always get letters in India from Africans who want me to send them some secret talisman which will ward off evil spirits or help them to become wealthy or whatever it is. And I always take a piece of paper and write the Maha Mantra on it and fold it up in a very kind of, you know, just simple way, and put it inside with a letter saying, please take this piece of paper, don't open it, be very, very careful with it, it's very powerful, and go to the marketplace where there's the biggest crowd. Don't let anyone know that you're coming. Go to the middle of the marketplace and get up on some kind of rooftop. And then scream this secret ancient mantra at the top of your voice, and it will completely change your life. I don't know if anybody's done it yet, but... So anyway, Arjuna and I were out in his Mercedes car, and we were driving around, and we passed through different roadblocks. I don't know, maybe during the war here they had something like that, but in India, in Delhi, you'll find there are different check posts, even in the city. And so in Nigeria, in Lagos, they had all these check posts because there's a lot of car theft there. Whenever you have poor people, there's a saying, Daridra Dosho Gunarashi Nashi, a poor man loses all his good qualities, because if you suffer just to, you know, you need food in your stomach, it's hard to be honest. It's you know, survival of the fittest, and so it's like that. Anyway, they have all these check posts checking people, their cars and their papers. So I was a little worried because these check posts, you know, I'd heard things about Africa and about the dangers, and you know, in fact, some devotees even got killed in Sierra Leone, or down that area in the Gold Coast of Africa. There was one Johnson or somebody or other. I forget his name, but he was a tyrant. And some devotees had a temple there. And somehow or other they had a meeting with him. And at one point he was going to kill them. And then some devotees cried. He couldn't understand how monks would have women with them. And so he was going to kill them as being bogus. And so then one of the devotees started to cry. And somehow or other he had compassion on them or whatever. Let them go. And then they told him about Food for Life and the work they were doing. He was very happy. So then one lady devotee got the idea to write him a letter and give him some advice how to run his country. And that was a mistake. Because about 5 or 6 devotees were taken out and shot. Ended up in the river. So, you know, I'd heard things about Africa, and I was worried a little bit. But I was with Arjuna, okay. But anyway, sure enough, one of the roadblocks pulled us over, and there were 4 guys with Sten guns, and they were quite menacing looking. So the leader came over to our car, and, you know, he didn't say, "Excuse me, sir," or anything like that. He just stuck his Sten gun in the window and said to Arjuna, "Show me your papers." So Arjuna had not brought his license with him or papers for the car. So he said, "I'm sorry, I don't have it." He was, like I said, he was very cool. He didn't say, "Hey, look, I'm the commissioner of police. I'll, you know, have you beaten and thrown to the alligators." He just was very cool. So then the guy got a little upset and said, "I have to see your papers." And he shook the gun. Arjuna said, "You've got me. I don't have them." So then the guy stepped back and walked over to his friends, and they talked for a few minutes. Then he came over. He said, "If you don't show me your papers, I'll have to take you into the police station." And Arjuna said, "I didn't bring them with me." He kept quiet. So then I thought, oh, gosh, what a problem. Then the guy stepped back, and he looked in the other side of the car, and here I was in dhoti and kurta. Oh, no, what's going to happen? So he saw me, and he looked at me for a few seconds. Then he turned back to Arjuna, and he said, "Oh, you're with Prabhupada's men. You can go." That's how much they had penetrated. So, anyway, the point is that in my travels, sometimes I have an assistant. A lot of times I don't. I travel alone. You know what happens to me when I travel alone? It's a funny thing. I don't know, Krishna's got a tremendous sense of humor, or I don't know. Different things happen, but, you know, you get on a plane and you just have to take whatever seat is given to you. You can't, you know, go over the roster and see the gender of people and, you know, I want to be next to... You can say aisle, seat, or window, but that's it. And so often, I will sit down in a seat in the plane, and, you know, I've had two things happen to me, completely opposite. Either I get, as a passenger right beside me, the most beautiful, sexy-looking woman on the whole plane. Or I'll get a nun. It blows my mind how it happens. And I've got to totally react differently according to the different situation. To the beautiful, sexy-looking lady, I preach very nicely, and to the nun, I ignore. Because she's already made her commitment. Maybe I can save the sexy lady. But that's funny. Oftentimes, though, it's a fact, the sexy lady is actually unhappy, miserable, and looking for a better path. You know the story about the prostitute and the brahmana? The prostitute was, unhappy, but by her birth and by her situation, she had to do the work of a prostitute. And she happened to live in the same neighborhood as a Brahmin. I don't know how that happened, but Brahmana living in the red light district. But anyway, this Brahmana was doing his austerities and doing his puja and deity worship and everything. And every day he was sitting on the porch of his house meditating, and he would see all these customers going to the house of the prostitute. And, you know, he was a little envious, actually, and thinking, oh, they're all going there for enjoyment, and I'm just, you know, here doing all this austerity, but I'll be going back to Godhead, so it doesn't matter. You know, but his mind was constantly thinking of the prostitute. And the prostitute was thinking, oh, this Brahmana, he's so pure, so nice, serving the Lord, and I'm in a wretched condition, and oh, I wish I didn't have to do this. And so eventually they both died around this, at the same time, and the Yama Dutas and the Vishnu Dutas, the agents of Yama and the agents of Vishnu, came to take them. But it appears that they got the wrong address mixed up, because the Yama Dutas went to the house of the Brahmana and the Vishnu Dutas went to the prostitute house. So the Brahmana immediately pointed this out, that there's been some mistake here. I think you have wrong address. The prostitute's over there. And then the Yama Dutas checked and they said, nope. We got the correct address. All your life you've been thinking of illicit sex and the prostitute. And the prostitute has only been thinking of Krishna. So, actually, sometimes I find this, that, so-called flashy people who are, sometimes they're in the most suffering condition. They're actually very unhappy and they need preaching. I would rather that some householder take on that duty, but when you're on the plane, there's nothing you can do. But you do meet, I do find that you really get, by traveling Sankirtan is also like that, you do get an opportunity as a devotee to meet with good and bad situations, and you really have to learn to be tolerant of both good and bad, happiness, distress, honor and dishonor. And but I must say here, I've had very wonderful treatment, and I'm completely equanimical, but I like this better. So thank you very much, and I invite you all to come to India for a nice visit sometime in your life. Prabhupada did want all of us to go to India at some time in our career and absorb a little bit of culture. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.